me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, we're going to learn how there's anti-carcinogenic potential in bee propolis. Who says? Well, an article in the Journal of Ayurvedic and Integrative Medicine, research done at the Bharati University in India. Well, bee propolis from the beekeepers has been used for a long time for its medicinal properties. And thanks to its abundance in phytonutrients like polyphenols and flavonoids and anti-cancer agent, caffeic acid and some other nutrients are being used because it's really strong to prevent cancer. That's just one of the studies we'll be citing today and sharing with you on how to live a longer and healthier life and prevent disease. But today, most of what we're going to do is talk about the coronavirus with new information. It is my belief that the powers that be, Fauci, the White House, Bill Gates, and Big Pharma, the Federal Reserve, have been working together, each for its own agenda, but sharing a lot of misinformation. Who says? Leading virologists, epidemiologists, top physicians, and scientists around the world. We're going to share their insights. And unfortunately, what they're saying is directly in contradiction to what the official position is in the United States. I'll give you an example. It was Anthony Fauci who said with absolute certainty, you can expect 1.7 million deaths in the United States alone. Well, that didn't happen. Then they downgraded that to 200,000 deaths. And then this morning it was 60,000 deaths. It'll go down further for a lot of reasons, including reasons we discuss on this program. Comorbidities, meaning if you have other diseases that you would have died from, then you should give the credit in any statistical analysis to those diseases, not just to the COVID-19 virus. Also, they've been disingenuously, and we've caught them doing it. We have a chart, their chart, showing that the death rate from flu has just plummeted, and pneumonia has plummeted. Why? Because all those deaths from flu and pneumonia that would normally happen every year, anywhere from, let's say, 30 to 60,000 Americans, all that's being given over to the COVID-19. Now, that's not to suggest it's not a deadly killer. It is. And that it's easily spread, that it certainly is. But that doesn't make it a pandemic. That makes it of concern. But just like the flu season, it's a season. And therefore, the immune system is changing. Shouldn't we be putting emphasis on prevention? So we're going to hear from doctors and scientists around the world today in what is called the COVID-19, what is really going on. It's about 25 minutes. Before then, we're going to hear from one physician stopping doctors from speaking, a clinician's manifesto. This is 8 minutes long. And it really is important. Rare is a mainstream Orthodox physician coming out and telling you the truth about medicine. And I believe it was extemporaneous. However, even if it was scripted, every single thing he is saying, we know is true. We've seen it, we've reported it, written about it, but it's different when someone on the inside starts speaking out, and boy, is there a time for this truth to be heard because of all the heroic nurses, doctors, people working in hospitals, emergency services, police. Everyone needs to get behind this clinician's manifesto. This couldn't have happened any other time. So that, and then Richard Gell will be coming on the end to go through the contradictions of what we've been told versus what we're now finding, because more and more people are speaking out and challenging the official position. They're not saying it doesn't exist. These are not conspiracy theorists. Those are all over the internet. And one of the worst is this David Icke fellow over in England, and some of the others who are not looking at the science, but looking at, well, it has to be 5G. No, it's not. It's completely separate. Don't conflate them. So these are real scientists talking about what it's like being given misinformation. So that's our show. But we start with this idea of B-propolis. Now, B-propolis is one of the best natural antibiotics you can have. It doesn't taste good. It looks like tar. Kind of tastes like that, too. And it's sticky. And it doesn't really dissolve. You just have to take like a teaspoon of it and get it in your mouth and swallow it all down with something. Because try blending it, doesn't work. But it's extremely powerful. It's what the bees line the hive with in order to protect themselves from pathogens. And they're saying here that because it's rich in polyphenolic compounds and flavonoids, that these also have one called caffeic, C-A-F-F-E-I-C acid, and that helps be an anti-cancer agent in the body. So, one more way we can help prevent cancer. On a weekly basis, take a bit of half a teaspoon of bee propolis. From University of Arkansas comes a study about how silver ions, there's your colloidal silver, kill bacteria. Now, there was a really foolish, in my opinion, irresponsible article saying, well, colloidal silver really doesn't do anything. We have a lot of studies that will be responding to that. They'll give you their opinion. We'll give you the peer-reviewed literature. This is just one of them. This just came up today. Quote, by studying proteins at the molecular level, scientists hope to understand how silver can be used to fight superbugs. The antimicrobial properties of silver have been known for centuries. Quote, while it is still a mystery as to exactly how silver kills bacteria, and by the way, this also viruses, University of Arkansas researchers have taken a step towards better understanding the process by looking at dynamics of proteins in live bacteria at the molecular level. Traditionally, the antimicrobial effects of silver have been measured through bioassays, which compare the effects of a substance on a test organism against a standard untreated preparation. While these methods are effective, they typically produce only snapshots in time. And yet this professor of physics and the author of the study, published in the Journal of Applied and Environmental Microbiology, a major peer-reviewed journal, instead, this professor and his colleagues used an advanced imaging technique called single-particle tracking photoactivated localization microscope to watch and track a particular protein found in E. coli bacteria. Over time, researchers were surprised to find that silver ions, there's your colloidal silver, actually sped up the dynamics of the protein, opposite of what they thought would happen. Quote, it is known that silver ions can suppress and kill bacteria. We thus expected that everything slowed down in the bacteria when treated with silver. But surprisingly, we found that the dynamics of this protein became faster. The researchers observed that silver ions were causing paired strands of DNA in the bacteria to separate and the binding between the protein and the DNA to weaken. Then the faster dynamics of the protein caused by silver can be understood. When the protein is bound to DNA, it moves slowly together with the DNA, which is a huge molecule in the bacteria. In contrast, when treated with silver, the proteins fall off from the DNA, moving by themselves and thus faster. So the observation of DNA separation caused by silver ions came from earlier work that a Dr. Wang and colleagues had done with bent DNA. Anyhow, it's just one of dozens of scientific peer-reviewed papers showing the power of colloidal silver. So I don't know why people feel that they can make an article, but we've seen this all the time. We've seen them attacking vitamin C, and then the person backed off of that when we responded. But anytime we see misinformation, we'll challenge it. From the University of Balıkesir in Turkey comes a study about catechin, C-A-T-E-C-H-I-N, and quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, and how it protects you against free radicals induced by exhaustive exercise. And that's one of the reasons that for decades, everyone in the Natural Living and Running Walking Club was encouraged to take quercetin before working out, and then a lot more after working out to trap the free radicals and to enhance recovery. Now we've got a lot of research backing that up. So this is what it's saying, that by using ketogen and quercetin for 10 days before an exhaustion exercise on free radicals and antioxidant enzyme levels, the study was performed, and it found that it made a measurable difference. So just two more things to take, not just if you're an athlete or you're exercising, but imagine it's going to help you for a lot of other reasons as well. Also from Massachusetts General Hospital, as well as the University of California, Davis, mind-body medicine, that's what we help promote. Experts urge full integration of stress reduction into care and research. In a perspective published in the New England Journal of Medicine, researchers from Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital call for broader use of mind-body practices. Now there you have it. Peer-reviewed journal, New England Journal of Medicine, highly respected institute, Massachusetts General Hospital, doing exactly what we've been saying. Why? Quote, stress exacerbates anxiety and depression and plays a role in conditions such as cardiovascular disease, autoimmune disorders, irritable bowel syndrome, headaches, and chronic pain. That's according to the MD, PhD, Dr. Michelle Dossett at the University of Health. By reducing the body's stress response, mind-body practices can be a powerful adjuvant in medicine by helping to decrease patients' symptoms and improving their quality of life. Well, now you've got an MD, PhD, major institution, peer-reviewed journal, and yet you will see all this denied by Wikipedia and its editors who have no background, nothing in this field, never treated a patient with complementary alternative approaches. Now imagine using mind-body therapies like meditation and yoga and mindfulness when you're quarantined. Now we're in a quarantine here. We don't go out on the road to exercise. We have a mile walk around this beautiful property. We have wonderful lectures every day. I just did one this morning. You all will see it on Monday. Probably be posted on YouTube in the afternoon. It'll also go to all the people in our home health study group. And it's all about dealing with crisis. So it's a series. Now, unlike a regular lecture I do that's about 2 hours long or 3 hours, these are all about 30 minutes more or less. And it's first coronavirus. Things I haven't talked about, I do in this. And we're using the latest science of how to deal with it, preventing it and helping yourself if you should be infected. Taking away the panic, because we've been oversold on the panic, as you will see. But think of all the people who are sitting at home, don't have enough food. And what about all those who've lost their jobs? 16.6 million. And then add on the other people who couldn't write you a check for $500. Well, how are they supposed to go buy food for them and their family if they have no money left? And that's another 55 million people. So you're dealing with over half the American population, yet no one's saying, how are these people supposed to eat? What about the ones who are already depressed? This could throw them into a suicidal position. So we're doing mind-body every day, 3 hours of green time every day, where all they're doing is sitting in 85-degree weather, listening to all the sounds of nature, beautiful gardens, and taking their juices and eating their gourmet vegan meal, taking classes, all in protection, wearing masks, and also other, every room down here has this special, unique, very high-grade commercial, and it's not for sale anywhere that I'm aware of right now, but I got these from a friend, and so that seven stages of purification, but being in quarantine has actually helped these people. Because as one woman said, I'd be spending half my day doing nothing. And I'd gain weight. I was losing my focus. I was losing my memory. I was losing my clarity. I was losing a lot of what I had prided myself on throughout my career. By the way, this is a chairman of a department of a major university. I never ask anybody what they do before they come. She just volunteered this, and she said, because of the lectures, because of the studying, because of the way that we're teaching, reading 15 minutes aloud from a book, and then everybody talking to themselves about what they learned from that, because when you talk out a problem, it stays more in your memory, you're likely to use it. Same thing with only watching small amounts of a film and then talking out to yourself what you learned from it. And she said, in all my years of teaching, I never thought about doing it this way. You go in, you do your whole class, not realizing how little is actually being absorbed and with no real good feedback. So you can use the time that you're at home constructively. And this is saying, yeah, body-mind medicine, it works. Well, we know it works. There are thousands of studies showing it works. But a few people have taken upon themselves, because their own ideology, their own bias, whether influenced by Big Pharma or not, and keeping people from trusting even the information the peer-reviewed journals like New England Journal of Medicine is giving you. Just something to think about, who you trust. Research shows regular tea drinkers maintain better cholesterol levels as you get older. Penn State University, published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, shows that a daily cup, one cup of herbal tea like green tea, can slow down the natural decrease in HDL, the good cholesterol that's associated with aging. So this is all good research. Green tea, one cup a day. Now remember I mentioned at the beginning of the program, catechins? Well, that's what you're getting in green tea, lots of them, catechins. So, by the way, a cup of tea or a handful of berries, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, pomegranate berries, can help prevent heart disease, according to this study, because they're strongly anti-inflammatory. Think of all of you who've been having your berry drinks in the morning. You're way ahead of this curve. And also from the University of York and the University of Edinburgh comes a study about why green spaces are good for gray matter, meaning your brain. And what they're saying here, in effect, in lay language, is just walking between busy urban environments, the cities, and green spaces triggers changes in levels of excitement, engagement, and frustration in the brain. And older people, in particular, are affected. So you need more green space. You need less urban space. And I believe in mass, people are going to be leaving many of the cities like Los Angeles, which is a dump, and New York, which is becoming a dump and is no longer a wonderful, vital, cultural city with some of the finest thinking and conversations you could have in the world. You never have to ask a New Yorker twice what they think about. They'll tell you, and they'll be honest. Right or wrong, they're going to be honest. And it used to be, when I came to the city, it was phenomenal. The vast majority of people living here also worked here, middle class, working people. Today, the average middle class person cannot afford to live in the very city that they built. And they can't go to the cultural events because, well, Broadway ticket, depending upon what you see, Hamilton, well, it can be $200, $300 or more dollars. So interesting, then why be in a city that no longer is hospitable to you, only for the rich? Unfortunate, but that's the way it is. But I do see more people moving to more beautiful places and enjoying other cultures, especially in, well, on an upcoming program, one of the many lectures I'm doing on how to deal with crisis is how to deal with crisis, where to live. I'm going to be recommending three countries to live in that'll be the best places in the world to live in the future. The United States is not one of them. And finally, from Tohoku University in Japan comes a study about how trans fats, that's the majority of fats the average American consumes in French fries, pizza crusts, potato chips, bagels. That's where we get it, how it actually contributes to cell death. And this is published in the peer-reviewed journal Scientific Reports, and it implicates the role of trans fats in enhancing the mitochondrial signaling pathway that leads to programmed cell death. So, quote, accumulating evidence is associated with the consumption of trans fatty acids with various diseases, including some lifestyle diseases, atherosclerosis, and dementia. But the underlying causes have remained largely unknown until now. And they found out how cells instigate programmed cell death. It's called apoptosis if their DNA is damaged beyond repair. And DNA damage can occur in response to a variety of factors, including free radicals, ultraviolet radiation, and anti-cancer drugs. Normally, cells counteract this process by repairing the lesions, but problems in the DNA damage response can lead to diseases also associated with trans fats. So, now we know what we didn't, and good for that. We are 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. And when we come back, we're going to a statement, good for him, from a medical doctor who's saying, stop silencing doctors. And right now, doctors telling you the truth are being fired. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
It's Dr. Zubin Damania. That's right. When I use my full name, it usually means stuff's about to get real. Okay, guys, I've heard about the firing of Dr. Ming Lin up in Washington State. He's a physician, an emergency doctor, who was fired by his organization, Peace Health, up there, for speaking out about the complete lack of PPE and protection for frontline staff. Now, this has been reported all over the place, and here's the bottom line, guys. As clinicians, as the tribe of healthcare, COVID-19 will be the catalyst that burns this broken system to the ground. And here's why. When you have a dominator hierarchy where the profession is run by MBAs at the top getting ridiculous salaries who have never touched a patient, right? And I'm not talking about clinician leaders. I'm not talking about all those organizations around the country that are so well led, where it's a team, where every member of the team has a voice, where we're all in this together, where everyone's practicing at the top of their training together in service of the patient and each other. That's called Health 3.0. That's not what we have in most institutions in this country. What we have is the scenario where a business person turns a beautiful sacred calling, our sacred calling, into dollars and cents and yachts and bonuses and golden parachutes. And then when a crisis happens where we're called on to sacrifice our lives in service of this calling, they sit there and say, you can't have a voice. Okay, this ends today. This is the end of the administrative technocracy that has destroyed medicine. COVID-19 will wash this filth back into the sea from which it oozed out. This is the end of it, and I'll tell you why. We on the front lines of healthcare will hold every single leader accountable when this is over. And why do I say when this is over? Because now we're doing what we do to save lives with no support, no protection. And when we speak out, what happens? You're fired. Is this the most absurd thing you've ever heard in your life? Here's what we demand as clinicians, because when this is over, we will never forget what they did. When this is over, this is what we're gonna demand. And if they don't give it to us, we are gonna walk. We will create it ourselves. We will go to those organizations that are already doing this, and they exist all around the country, clinician-led, wonderful groups that take the MBAs and use what they know to keep the lights on, while people who actually are at the bedside touching patients run the show. What we demand is this. We demand an end to gag orders. We demand an end to non-competes. We demand an end to non-clinical leadership telling us how to take care of patients. We demand an end to the administrative technocracy. We demand an end to HIPAA as it sits. It has been a gag on us. We're unable to innovate. We're unable to speak out. HIPAA should be a choice for the patient. They control their privacy, not you. How many times have we heard HIPAA being used as a sword against clinicians who need to speak out? Well, we're worried about patient privacy. No, you're not. You're worried about someone figuring out how much you make and how little you do to actually help patient care. You are a parasite. And when this is done, the people who have done this, the people who fired Ming, anybody like that, we're going to flip the script. This is that call to action. We will demand that they be fired. Instead of firing us, they will be gone. All right? We demand that EHRs are no longer a cash register, that they help us take care of patients. We demand an end to nurse slavery. Nurses are not slaves. They are not commodities. They are not cost centers. They are the beating heart of medicine. They are part of our team. And they will be treated as such, or you will go. You will be gone. Not the nurse who speaks out, you will be gone. We demand teamwork, where every person in the team has a voice, is practicing at the top of their training, and collaborating with each other to support not just our patients, but each other. Right? We'd like malpractice reform. We're tired of covering our asses, racking up costs for no benefit to the patient. We would like, okay, in return, to do some things. We would like to actually have quality science be a thing, quality improvement be a thing. And we promise that we will step up and realize and admit and fix the fact that most of what we do doesn't help patients. We do it because we're paid to do it. That has to change. Our incentives need to change. We need to be paid to do telehealth. Hello, most of what we do doesn't need a patient to come and sit in a waiting room and pay a copay and be miserable. And we have to promise to focus on preventing patients from ever needing to come to see us. Wouldn't that be something? Instead of sick care going to actual health care, we call that health 3.0. And that is coming after this COVID crisis. The COVID will be the catalyst that burns the old system down and the new will emerge. And it's going to be so much more connected, rehumanized. Technology will enable our human relationship instead of obstructing it as it does now. And we will hold ourselves accountable to step up and make sure we wash our damn hands, because we still don't, and we're costing lives. We're going to look at the things we do with a critical scientific eye and go, does it actually help, or is it just getting me paid to do this procedure? And we'll realize that we have to hold our patients accountable, because right now they expect a magic pill for everything. Those people that are sitting on the beach, going to the bars, not socially distancing, okay, we still take care of them when they show up and get ventilated with ARDS in the unit, because that's what we do. But it's time for them to uphold their part of this social covenant. We are all in this together, right? So here's the call to action. Any administration that is misbehaving during this time, you, the frontline clinicians, hold them accountable. If we all speak out at once, they cannot fire us all. You know why? They desperately need us. They desperately need us. And they have taken advantage of our altruism and our work ethic for way too long. To the leaders that are doing such a wonderful job, and I get messages from them all the time about how they're working 24/7 to try to get PPE when they can't, to try to support their clinicians, to open up new spaces to take care of COVID patients. We love and support and will work with you. All right? Share this video.
You bet. We're posting it and we get a lot of people. I want everyone in this audience who believes that he and all physicians and nurses need the freedom to practice medicine the way medicine should be practiced, with informed consent of the patient, using modalities that they have reason to believe will work, instead of by some mindless, arrogant, and completely greedy bureaucrat or technocrat who's got an MBA and running the whole system. That's why you're paying outrageous amounts of money when you go into an emergency room, even if you get no care in there, or whatever you get is outrageously charged, because he's right. And thank goodness someone from inside is coming out. And let's hope now we have a river of these. If any physician or nurse would like to post your experiences, all you need is give us your first name or a first initial, and we will go to prnstudio@gmail.com, prnstudio@gmail.com, and we will post your experiences, your suggestions, the truths you know that have not been spoken, because our entire medical system is broken. We've been talking about this for decades, but now they're talking about it because the coronavirus brought them to this place. Good. Let's now see if we can't change. And there's one more reason why we should have Medicare for all. If we have Medicare for all, then people wouldn't be going broke because they couldn't afford to be tested or treated. They're saying the testing is free, but what happens if they test positive and now they're treated? That is not free. Now we're going to go directly to the second clip. Now, mind you, what you're hearing now in Sing, you can watch this. If you go to our place online, you can download this, and people can watch the videos on YouTube stream by youtube.com/PRNFM, youtube.com/PRNFM. And some people said they didn't see yesterday's program where I was doing a Skype live presentation. All you had to do is just scroll down the page, and you would have seen the photograph on the left-hand side, and you could have watched it from there. So you heard it, but you didn't see it. Now that's where you'll go. I'll do three or four Skypes next week live. So what you're going to hear are scientists. These are respected scientists, not conspiratorials. There's no, Alex Jones in this. No, these are credible people telling you the truth. And time permit at the end, I'll give you some thoughts on it. If not, you're going to hear and see stuff you would not have known otherwise. Now to stop. Now it's called COVID-19, what is really going on.
Available in 12 or 13 different languages. I'm attaching the link inside the comments regarding your own families. So let's begin in Italy, because we know that Italy has been very hard hit by this. It's important to note that Northern Italy has one of the oldest populations and the worst air quality in Europe. And that has already caused an increased number of respiratory diseases and deaths. And they're saying it's an additional risk factor in this current epidemic. This is a satellite image that shows how Northern Italy has the highest level of air pollution in Europe. A leading Italian doctor reports that strange cases of pneumonia were seen in the Lombardy region already in November 2019, which raised again the question if they were caused by the new virus, which was officially appeared in Italy February 2020, or by other factors such as the dangerously high smog levels in Northern Italy. Another interesting and important factor to consider was brought forth on March 19th of 2020, a report in the Italian newspaper Corriere della Sera. And they pointed out that Italian intensive care units already collapsed under the marked flu wave from 2017-2018, and they had to postpone operations, call nurses back from holiday, and they ran out of blood donations. So these issues in the hospitals have been occurring since before the COVID-19 virus. An Italian study published August of 2019 found that flu deaths in Italy were between 7,000 and 25,000 in recent years. This value is higher than in most other European countries due to the large elderly population in Italy, and it's much higher than anything attributed to COVID-19 so far. So according to the latest data of the Italian National Health Institute, The average age of the positively tested deceased in Italy is currently about 81 years old. 10% of the deceased are over 90 years old, and 90% of the deceased are over 70 years old. This graph demonstrates the number of diseases that the deceased people suffered from. The light blue being no other diseases, the slate color being one other disease, the green two other diseases, and the orange 3+. Nearly 80% of their deceased had suffered from two or more chronic diseases. 50% of the deceased had suffered from three or more chronic diseases. And the chronic diseases included in particular cardiovascular problems, diabetes, respiratory problems, and cancer. Less than 1% of the deceased were healthy persons, such as persons without any pre-existing chronic diseases, and only about 30% of the deceased are women. On March 17th, Italian immunologist and professor Sergio Romagnani from the University of Florence came to the conclusion in a study on 3,000 people that 50 to 75% of the test positive people of all ages remain completely symptom free, and that's significantly more than previously assumed. South Korea, for instance, has experienced a much milder course than Italy and has already passed the peak of the epidemic. In South Korea, only about 70 deaths with a positive test result have been reported so far. Regarding the situation in Italy, most major media falsely report that Italy has up to 800 deaths per day from the coronavirus. In reality, the president of the Italian Civil Protection Service stresses that these are deaths with the coronavirus and not from the coronavirus. So let's watch that clip.
Purtroppo oggi registriamo 627 nuovi deceduti. E voglio ricordare che questi sono deceduti con il
is around 1800 deaths per day. Thus it is possible, perhaps even likely, that a large part of normal daily mortality now simply counts as COVID-19 deaths as they test positive. This is the point stressed by the president of the Italian Civil Protection Service. The few dozen test positive Swiss deaths so far were also high-risk patients with chronic diseases, an average age of more than 80 years and a maximum age of 97 years, whose exact cause of death from the virus or pre-existing diseases is not yet known. The renowned Italian virologist Giulio Taro argued that the mortality rate of COVID-19 is below 1% even in Italy, and it's therefore comparable to influenza. The higher values only arise because no distinction is made between deaths with and by COVID-19, and because the number of symptom-free infected persons is greatly underestimated. An extensive survey in Iceland found that 50% of all test-positive persons showed no symptoms at all, while the other 50% mostly showed really moderate cold-like symptoms. According to the Icelandic data, the mortality rate of COVID-19 is in the per mille range, i.e. in the flu range or below. The German Network for Evidence-Based Medicine criticized the media reporting on COVID-19. They state, "The media coverage does not in any way take into account the criteria of evidence-based risk communication that we have demanded. The presentation of raw data without reference to other causes of death leads to an overestimation of the risk." A manufacturer of the COVID-19 test kits states that it should only be used for research purposes and not for diagnostic applications, as it's not yet been clinically validated. Furthermore, studies are showing that the internationally used virus test kits may give a false positive result in some cases. In these cases, the persons may not have contacted the new coronavirus, but presumably one of the many existing human coronaviruses that are part of the annual and currently ongoing common cold and flu epidemics. In Switzerland, some emergency departments are already overloaded simply from people who want to be tested. This is actually an additional psychological and logistical component of the current situation. A preliminary study by researchers at Stanford University showed that 20 to 25% of COVID-19 positive patients tested additionally positive for other influenza or coral viruses. Two Stanford professors of medicine, Dr. Aaron Ben-David and Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, explain in an article that the lethality of COVID-19 is overestimated by several orders of magnitude and is probably even in Italy only at 0.01% to 0.06%, and thus below that of influenza. The reason for this overestimation is the greatly underestimated number of people already infected that are without symptoms. As an example, the fully tested Italian community of Vaud is mentioned, which showed 50 to 75% symptom-free test positive persons.
Questions. Who knew exactly what was happening outside. Suppose he was an MD who understood the coronavirus in detail and that he held a doctorate in economics that enabled him to understand the economic implications of the virus. That describes my own position right now. I'm about to speak with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, professor of medicine, and my friend right here at Stanford. Jay, thanks for making the time to join us.
My pleasure, Peter.
This is a special plague time edition of Uncommon Knowledge with Peter Robinson. I'm Peter Robinson. Jay's in his office because he's considered an essential worker. I'm at home because whatever else I am, I'm not essential. And so we're recording this thing online. Jay, here's the first question. How bad is it? You published a piece in the Wall Street Journal this past Tuesday, March 24th. We're recording this on Friday. Quote, if it's true that the coronavirus would kill millions without shelter-in-place orders and quarantines, then the extraordinary measures are surely justified. But there's little evidence to confirm that premise. Explain that.
Yeah, so I think the key thing to know about the virus and how much we know about it is that we actually don't know how many people have been infected. It's a very strange thing to say, given how much data is floating around. But it sounds like it's a remarkable thing, but it's actually just a plain scientific fact. And that has to do with the fact that the testing for the virus has focused on people who actively have the virus. The tests that have been used everywhere, that's what it does. It looks and sees if the RNA for the virus is in you. And if it's in you, then it's positive. If it's not in you, it's negative, and then that's that, right? But this is not like HIV, where if you get the virus, you have it for life. Most people, there's a range of presentations. You get the virus, you get some symptoms, and then you're better, and the virus is gone. And the test would be negative for someone like that. But there's increasing evidence that someone like that would probably be immune to being reinfected.
So when we talk about not the fatality rate, what is it called? The rate of lethality?
Yeah,
that's fatality. A ratio. It's a mathematical ratio in which the numerator is, very sadly, the number of people who die.
Right.
And the denominator is those who have been tested, right?
That's the measured case fatality rate.
All right, the measured case fatality rate.
Right. And the problem is that denominator does not count the people who got infected and were recovered.
All right. Two quotations, Jay. Here's Dr. Anthony Fauci. We all know he's as famous as the president right now. He's the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and here he is in early March, just a couple of weeks ago. Quote, the flu has a mortality rate of 0.1%, 0.1%. This, meaning the coronavirus, has a mortality rate of 10%. Times that, close quote. Here's Dr. Jay Bhattacharya in his piece in the Wall Street Journal. Again, this is March 24th, just a couple of days ago. Quote, and you're talking about when you think the virus was first seeded in this country. Quote, an epidemic seed on January 1st implies that by March 9th, about 6 million people in the U.S. would have been infected. As of March 23rd, it's that Monday of this week, there were 499 COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. That's a mortality rate of 0.01%. In other words, a whole order of magnitude less than Dr. Fauci claimed just a couple of weeks earlier.
I mean, I think the thing is, nobody knows the number. The numbers we've seen are consistent with a very, very wide range, from an epidemic that will kill 2 to 4 million people on one end, and an epidemic that will kill 50,000 to 100,000 people on the other. That's an incredibly broad range. And the policies you do to avoid 2 to 4 million deaths are very, very different than the policies you do to avoid, you know, 50,000 to 100,000 deaths.
In an article published in the European Journal of Clinical Investigation, Stanford Professor of Medicine John C. Ioannidis criticized the harms of exaggerated information and non-evidence-based measures. He asserts that the new coronavirus may be no more dangerous than some of the common coronaviruses, even in older people. He argues that there is no reliable medical data backing the measures currently decided upon. It's important to note that countries like South Korea and Japan that introduced no lockdown measures have experienced near zero excess mortality in connection with COVID-19. While the Diamond Princess cruise ship experienced an extrapolated mortality figure in the per mille range, using data from the cruise ship, he showed that the age-corrected lethality of COVID-19 is between 0.025% and 0.65%, which means at or below the level of the seasonal flu. Ioannidis did a one-hour in-depth interview on the lack of data for COVID-19 measures. Here is a clip of it.
So, Professor, if you could just begin by telling us your name and a little bit about your background.
I'm John Ioannidis. I'm a professor of medicine and of epidemiology and population health at Stanford University. I'm one of the two directors, co-directors of the Meta-Research Innovation Center at Stanford, or METRICS. My research is interested in appraising evidence, in trying to understand data, strengths of data, and weaknesses of data, and trying to make sure that we have the most useful information to make decisions that matter.
You recently wrote an article that caused a lot of discussion. Could you tell us why you wrote it?
So this article was trying to appraise the current situation regarding COVID-19. COVID-19 is clearly the major challenge that we're facing as a country, as the whole world, actually. It is a major threat. We need to act with alacrity, and we need to act having the best data. We need to act having reliable data. Unfortunately, much of the information that we have collected so far, and this is not to blame anyone, it's just something that has arisen very fast and has caught us off guard in a way. It's a new pandemic. Most of that information is not reliable. We have increasing evidence that many of the key features that pertain to what this pandemic is about, how lethal is that virus, how many people it has infected or will infect, what is likely to be the eventual impact, and how effective are the different measures that we're applying. We have major gaps in practically all of those fronts. So it is imperative that we try to cover this lack of unbiased evidence as quickly as possible.
And that logic was one of the first victims. The Milan microbiologist Maria Rita Gismondo called on the Italian government to stop communicating the daily number of corona positives, as these figures are fake, and put the population in unnecessary panic. She added, "The number of test positives depends very much on the type and number of tests and says nothing about the state of health." ARTE documentary Profiteers of Fear from 2009 showed us how the mainly privately financed World Health Organization upgraded a mild wave of influenza, the so-called swine flu, to a global pandemic so that vaccines worth several billion dollars could be sold to governments around the world. Some of the protagonists of that time are again prominently represented in the current situation. German immunologist and toxicologist Professor Stefan Hockerts explains in a radio interview that COVID-19 is no more dangerous than influenza, the flu, but that it's simply observed much more closely. More dangerous than the virus is the fear and panic created by the media and the authoritarian reaction of many governments. Professor Hockerts also notes that most so-called corona deaths have in fact died of other causes while also testing positive for coronaviruses. Hockerts believes that up to 10 times more people than reported have already had COVID-19 but noticed nothing or very little. According to press reports in Switzerland, oxygen bottles may become scarce. The reason is not currently a higher usage, but rather hoarding due to fear of future shortages. Former Israeli Health Minister Professor Yoram Lass says that the new coronavirus is less dangerous than the flu, and that lockdown measures will kill more people than the virus. He adds that the numbers do not match the panic, and psychology is prevailing over science.
Okay, we're bringing this down. As you can see, these are respected scientists throughout the world. They're not saying that the coronavirus doesn't kill. It does. They're not saying it's not easily spread. It is. What they're saying is the figures that we've been getting are wrong. For example, there's one community in Italy that quarantined the entire community, every single person, and then tested every single person. When they tested them, they found that a certain number were positive. And so then everybody began to wear a mask, everybody began to practice separation, and then they were treated with the normal medications to help that person. There were only, I think, three or four deaths in the entire town, whole town. And that's because everybody was tested by an accurate test. So that's what's important. We haven't done that. We should make it number one to test every single American. And those that test positive, they should be getting vitamin C intravenous strips with ozone and build up their immune system. None of that is being done in America, but when that was done in China, it worked. Why aren't we following that program instead of waiting for the drugs that have not been thoroughly tested? In fact, if anything, the drugs being currently recommended have shown either that they're very dangerous, can cause heart disease or heart attacks, or there's low effectiveness. So we've got to get a whole new perspective on this because it's just destroying lives. Richard Gale's online right now. Richard, bring us up to date on what you've been researching on the coronavirus.
Yeah, well, good afternoon, Gary. Johns Hopkins, let's just look at some quick figures here. Johns Hopkins has done a substantial amount of work comparing COVID-19 with the flu. So if we just look at the number of cases currently worldwide, their figures are up to date. So we're looking at about 1.6 million cases worldwide, and 466 cases in the U.S. What do we find for flu? Well, there's an estimated 1 billion cases worldwide, 9.3 million to 45 million cases in the U.S. And then when we look at the COVID-19 for the number of deaths, we're reporting about 97,000 at this moment and 16,600 in the U.S. Current figures. But for flu, deaths worldwide, about 646,000 and about 12,000 deaths in the U.S. Per year. There's no confirmed number of deaths for flu this year. So when we look at this and we look at the the cause of the estimated 38 million illnesses and hospitalizations, and just the number of hospitalizations due to flu. The CDC estimates about 8% of the U.S. population gets sick with the flu every season. So that's 8%, and the death rate is traditionally around 0.1% in the U.S. So, I mean, just these, look at these figures alone makes us, we have to wonder why it's so many of these different kind of draconian efforts are being made right now over and beyond what individuals could just do themselves by taking personal responsibility, such as social distancing and hygiene, wearing masks when you have to, or wiping down surfaces, as opposed to, Big Brother just telling us everything we have to do, and to even just make the situation so much worse by, especially if we could see the impact on the economy, that would be the main thing we would be looking at. So those are just a couple of my comments.
Okay, a few comments. First of all, they have been disingenuous. The people who are dying of this by over 98% in Italy were people who already had multiple comorbidities. The more comorbidities they had, such as if they had heart disease and emphysema, they were more likely to die. If they had heart disease, emphysema, and were obese, more likely to die. But the town that recorded the highest deaths in Italy was a town that is the most polluted in all of Europe. Massive air pollution there. And it kills people because air pollution kills. Now guess what Sofia Kasakov of The Vice just put up? Quote, Cancer Alley has some of the highest coronavirus death rates in the country, as predominantly black communities in the polluted area along the Mississippi from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, face heightened risk of COVID-19, the EPA has suspended enforcement of the environmental rules designed to protect them. So as the highest rate in Italy was in the most polluted area of Italy, now we're seeing one of the most high-risk areas in the United States is also one of the most polluted risks in the United States. So you cannot take out of the equation pollution. You cannot take out of the equation pre-existing medical conditions. You cannot take out of the equation people who are asymptomatic for the whole disease, meaning they don't get sick at all. They never even knew they had it. Well, wouldn't common sense and reason so show that those people are younger or older and healthier? Because the percentage of healthy older adults who come down with the virus and die is tiny compared to the astronomical number, percentage-wise, of older people who have morbidities. So we're not looking at the truth. Otherwise, here's what it should be, so people can understand this. If they're telling us that everyone is equally susceptible, everybody therefore has to be in quarantine, everybody has to lose their job and probably career, small businesses, because you're all equally responsible, then you should see the same identical death rate in from babies, teenagers, millennials, middle-agers, baby boomers, and senior citizens. You don't. It is not possible. All statistics in the world show just to the contrary. The average age for over 2 months of the death rates were around 80 years of age. It should have been every group the same, which means from my particular perspective that these people were infected, as people will be infected by the flu virus or the cold virus, but not everybody gets sick. Why? Because their immune systems are strong. The weaker the immune system, more susceptible. They haven't brought in here natural immunity. They have brought in not a single expert on any of these stupid shows that I was going to call them reality shows, but MSNBC and all of them are nothing more than reality shows because there's nothing real about it. It's all staged and very biased. But then you would bring in people to say, how do we get healthier? So mind you, if the vast majority of people dying are dying because of lifestyle and environmentally induced conditions, and more people die every hour in the United States from heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and obesity, and dementia, then all the deaths from the coronavirus, then wouldn't you think that we would give some attention to staying healthy, some attention other than washing your hands. So exactly how is washing a person's hands going to make a difference with someone who has end-stage emphysema from smoking all their life, or working in the coal mines of West Virginia, or the cotton processing mills with brown lung in the South? It won't. So why not talk about what really causes these disease? They won't. They can only talk about what they can control. And once again, they are looking to profit, unfortunately, off of disease. Richard, thank you, and thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Noll. This was a special report on the coronavirus, telling you the truth. Have a nice day. Yeah.